Judge Shaw, Injury Law, 732-888-8888.
Team Man Justice,
Team Man Judd, the injury accident professionals.
First class service,
Judd gets it done. Maximum compensation's our goal. See JudgeShawInjuryLaw.com. Team Man Judge Shaw, Injury Law, 732-888-8888.
Matt Judd. Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Thanks to Blue Claws left-hander Matt Osterberg for a few minutes here on Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 69. Introducing Bally Live, the only app where minor league baseball fans can score major rewards when you stream your favorite teams, chat with friends during a watch party, and test your skills at trivia. You'll score rewards. Being a fan of the minor leagues has never been so rewarding. So what are you waiting for? Download Bally Live for free from the App Store or Google Play Store and start scoring rewards today. Blue Claws are home through Sunday, and just checking in on what's going on this week. Thursday, of course, Thursday, Friday's Girl Scout Night with post-game fireworks. Saturday, Marvel's Defenders of the Diamond Night with Spider-Man. And then Sunday, the usual Kids Day Fair, capped by Kids Run the Bases. And kids eat free as well. Of course, July 4th is coming up 2 weeks from today as we tape this on the 20th. It's presented by Camping World, Red, White, and Blue Claws post-game fireworks. And you really want to check out the new Blue Claws Stars and Stripes cap. It's on blueclaws.com/shop. Just type in stars or stripes in the search bar. You'll see it there. Really came out nice. It's the red, white, and blue version of the surfing crab. And they put little gold stars on the surfboard that he's got. I think you really like that. And that is a popular item going quick in the team store. So check that out as well. That'll do it for us here today on Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 69. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Thanks for listening to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Our guest today, Blue Claws left-hander Matt Osterberg, joins us from Wilmington, where last night, we taped this on Thursday the 15th, last night he threw seven innings. First Blue Claw to get through seven this year, gave up just the one run. Matt, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm great. How are you?
All right. So you're in a nice groove right now. You know, two starts in a row where you pitched deep into the ball game, and you know, three of the last four. How do you feel out there on the hill?
Good. I mean, I really attribute that to, last night especially, Brady gave me a challenge to retire as many hitters as I could in four pitches or less. And I think that's really something that we started a lot last year. Being a guy who doesn't throw very hard and doesn't have quite the high quality grade of stuff that a lot of other guys have, I think that retiring hitters as quickly as possible has been my biggest thing out there.
Yeah, I mean, you only threw 75 pitches in the seven innings, and you faced 24 batters, so you know, just over three pitches per batter. So when you approach it like that, you know, what do you have to do early in the count, obviously, to set yourself up to get those outs on 2-3 pitches?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the first pitch almost always has to be a strike. Regardless of what it is, obviously you can't just throw fastballs in there first pitch to every guy. So I think as a starter, having four pitches that I can throw for a strike to any hitter is really what allows me to do that.
What was something especially working in your start last night?
Last night it was a lot of changeup, a lot of cutters to the righties. They had seven out of nine were right-handed last night. So just keeping that changeup on the outer half and down, and really getting swings and throwing it for a strike early. Those were the main things against those right-handed hitters.
And then how did your approach change, and how do you guys try to spice it up, because you almost made it through the order, you know, three full times last night?
Yeah. So the first time through was a lot of fastball off speed. It was probably 50-50 fastball versus off speed. And then once we got to that second time through, it started to be more cutter. And I used that to get in on a righty's hands so I can go back to that changeup, because my fastball has a little bit of arm side run. So that cutter just allows me to get in on the thumbs and break bats of a right-handed hitter, get them off that changeup a little bit.
I know the Phillies have been very pro cutter, especially with their right-handed pitchers. How long have you thrown that pitch?
That's a new pitch for me this year.
Okay. So when did they approach you about kind of throwing it, and was it in the, you know, did you start throwing it in the spring? Did you play around with it in the winter?
Yeah, that was something that I talked to Vic Diaz about at the end of last year. He was my pitching coach last year. He said, like, as you move up, there are going to be hitters that don't necessarily adjust to the velo difference that I have, because it, at that point, it wasn't a very large one. So I was throwing like a slider at like 85 and then fastballs at 90. Mm-hmm. And my changeup was somewhere around 85, 86. So hitters were, hitters didn't have to make an adjustment to hit the off speed for a foul ball even. So it was resulting in some longer at bats, and it wasn't allowing me to get deeper in the game. So that was something that he brought up as a solution to that, to just like induce weak contact. Instead of that being a foul ball, now it's a ground out to third or a ground out to short.
How do you throw it instead of the slider or along with it?
No, I throw it along with the slider.
And how does it, how do they differ?
Yeah. So when we went to Greensboro earlier this year, first of all, we went to Hickory and then Greensboro. So in Hickory, I had an outing that was a little bit similar to some of the ones last year, where I didn't have that velo separation, and it resulted in a lot of competitive swings by hitters. So in my bullpen in Greensboro, we said, okay, maybe we need to adapt the slider a little bit so it doesn't, so it's not so close to the changeup, and it gives hitters a little bit of a larger change in velocity. So we switched the grip on that, and it dropped down to about 77. And the movement picked up on it a little bit, so it became more of a sweeper than a traditional slider. And that's now 77 instead of 84. And then the cutter is still sitting like 86, 88.
And it has that same... You know, it comes in on the same path as the fastball, right, with a little bit later movement?
Yeah, the cutter does, yeah.
Right, yeah. What have you learned this year from Brady and Phil?
So this year has been a larger focus on how I recover post-start, because in the past I've been a pretty slow recoverer, regardless of whether I'm throwing 40 pitches or 80 pitches. It all feels the same to me the next day. So I talked a lot with Brady about what kind of recovery processes he used to use, and what other guys use post-pitching, whether it be start or relief. And then we also talked about how I can use four pitches in different parts of the zone. So cutter, I can use it essentially as two different pitches, throwing it on the outer half of the plate versus the inner half of a plate to a righty. Mm-hmm. And even both on the inner half, up versus down, where they play as two different pitches, more of a weak contact pitch when it's up and more of a swing and miss pitch if it's down.
Brady's got to be able to provide some pretty cool and useful perspective for you guys. Not that Phil wouldn't, but Brady just having played as recently as last year, you know, he's been through the grind that you guys are going through now in the modern, in the modern game, right?
Yeah. He brings a very player oriented perspective. So with older coaches, usually they've been in the coaching game for so long that it's a very, coaching oriented perspective. And Brady still brings that like loose laid back, that player side where he knows, he's got a better understanding of what we go through on a daily basis and how hard it actually is. So he really, really, connects with that part of a player.
So what's your approach going into your start? Like say last night you had faced Wilmington, you know, four starts back in Lakewood. You have four runs and five and a third. That was the game you, I think, where you're scoreless into the sixth and it kind of got away there in the sixth inning. But now you're facing them again, unlike last week against Hudson Valley, where you're facing them for the first time. Do you go back and rewatch that start? You know, do you have a different perspective on their hitters? I know a couple guys are gone, but it's mostly the same lineup.
Yeah. I don't look at the past start at all. I kind of remember what worked in that start, but generally it's just attack hitters, mm-hmm. because essentially hitters up here don't really make adjustments from at bat to at bat. So if you attack a guy in the first at bat a certain way, chances are you can attack him the same way in the second at bat. Especially if you get an ugly swing or a strikeout or something like that. Also there were a bunch of guys in the lineup last night that weren't in the lineup that I faced four weeks ago. So essentially it was pretty much a 50-50 split on whether I had seen these guys before.
Right.
So that's just where Brady's scouting report comes into play, where it's just attack these hitters.
You and Jordan Fowler are kind of similar. You had pitched one day apart. They split you up. I guess you're now two days apart. But you know, do you guys kind of look at things together and how you're going to go after these guys? You know, you're both obviously left-handed. You know, not overpowering, but you'll throw every pitch and every count. You know, kind of similar styles there with you and Jordan.
Yes, absolutely. That's something where if he's starting after me, he watches my game a little more closely than some of the others in terms mm-hmm. of just pitch sequencing and what's working against certain guys. And the same goes for if I'm pitching after him, even because we're going to see this team later in the year, I believe.
Once more.
Yeah. So that's something where I'm still watching his start, even though I pitched last night, because that's stuff that could help me next series against them.
So go back to the to 2021. You get drafted by the Phillies in the 15th round. Were they one of the teams that you thought might grab you there out of St. Cloud State, or did the fact that you got taken by the Phillies compared to the other 29 teams, did that surprise you?
Yeah, that was a big surprise to me actually. That was something where there were a couple teams on my radar that I had calls from and stuff like that were in communication with me, but the Phillies were not one of them actually.
So what was it? Were you following the draft? What were you doing when you got the call?
Yeah, I was sitting in my living room. My sister and I were the only ones there. My parents had left on they had a 25th anniversary trip planned.
Nice.
So they were out west in a state park in Wyoming with no service. So I got that call and my sister and I celebrated, and my parents found out probably between 6 and 8 hours later because they were in a national park.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So what was the transition like, into pro ball? And then, what did you take from that first taste you got in 2021 into a full season where you made 22 appearances in 2022?
Yeah. So that first initial just flight down there and stuff is as someone who doesn't or had no like pro ball experience or any insight into it from someone else, it's a little nerve wracking. You don't necessarily know what you're walking into. They don't give you a whole lot of like what to expect kind of stuff. It's more, here's a flight, here's an itinerary, here's where you need to be and when. And you show up and you've got your gear in a locker and you go about your day at the beginning. And it's that transition period at the beginning where you meet 200, 250 new people. And It's a little bit overwhelming at first, but then I moved up to Clearwater, and I think that once you get the first one out of the way, those nerves start to settle down a little bit. Then you realize that it's no different than the game you played as a 9-year-old.
Right.
It's still all the same.
Who's a guy in the system besides Brady, Phil, and you mentioned Vic Diaz, but a guy that, you know, has kind of made an impact on you and kind of helped you make that transition though?
Yeah, I think so my first manager, I think Marty Malloy, was that impact on me. He's kind of a guy who's a little bit like in your face at times.
Oh yeah. He was here. I know him well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he gave me that little kick that I needed to transition completely. Just with his sense of humor is a little bit different than what I was expecting out of a manager, mm-hmm. to begin with. And I think, he always, so when I would get to the dugout on days that I wasn't starting, he'd be ready with like just a question for me. So for example, with like runners on second, he stands with his hands on his knees, like almost bent over facing the outfield.
Yep.
And one day I walked into the dugout and he said, "Oh, do you know why I stand like that with a runner on second?" And I said, "So you don't get hit by the ball?" He said, "Yeah, that's part of it. But I can also see the whole field. I can see the runner for longer. I can put a stop sign up when the runner's halfway down the third baseline." He had a whole laundry list of reasons why he did every little thing. And I think that's something that players can look at as like, obviously we've got a routine, but if you don't have a reason for why you're doing something, why are you doing it?
Yeah, for sure. He was here in 2017, and the Blue Claws missed the playoffs by a half a game. And then in 2018, they made it all the way to the finals and lost to Rome, who had four big leaguers in their starting rotation. And then I'm glad that he got back in this year. They just clinched, obviously, last week. And hopefully they can get a ring for him there.
Absolutely.
They got a really nice team, and you guys already have gotten four guys just this week from Clearwater.
Yeah, I think they're gonna have an immediate impact up here, I think.
Yeah, it looks that way for sure. How's tell us about Eric Brito, who I know you played with last year. He's the only guy, I guess.
Yeah.
Last year, yeah.
Yeah. He's one of the cleanest shortstops I've seen in my time in pro ball. The routine plays look easy, and the tough plays, especially up the middle, also some guys don't make them look quite as easy as he does. And it's honestly, it's very impressive out of him.
Yeah. He's got some big shoes to fill because Casey was having a great year and certainly earned his promotion to double A Reading. All right. So grew up in Wisconsin. You know, obviously with the weather there, it's tougher to play baseball. You can't play baseball 12 months a year, at least outside. How did you, you know, were you a baseball guy all the way through? Did you play other sports in high school?
I was a baseball guy all the way through. Baseball was the only sport I played in high school. In middle school, I played, I think, 2 years of basketball and then decided it wasn't for me. But in a small school, those are, like, you've got coaches asking you,
sure,
hey, do you want to play? We've got a spot for you, just because the teams weren't big enough. And I spent most of, so I played spring ball in high school, obviously, but the summer was also filled by baseball. So in high school, I played Legion ball. I played one tournament for a travel team. And then in the winter, it was basically, here, take 2 months off of throwing. Once we hit Christmas, pick that back up. And that my focus shifted just from baseball to the weight room at that point.
Tell us about Coleman, Wisconsin, up by Green Bay, population 724.
Yeah. Yeah. So our population sign says 832. So
it went up. Okay. There you go.
Booming. Yeah. We're booming. Yeah. yeah. It's a two gas station town. There are no stoplights.
Not one.
Yeah. No, not a single one. Yeah. We've got, I mean, basically, there's basically nothing there. You could drive through the town in less than 2 minutes. And once you're through it, it's just fields on both sides until you hit the next town. And the high school was about 200 kids. And it's an attached building to the middle school and elementary school. So when you get out of middle school, you just walk down the hall to your high school locker the next year. Yeah. So you don't have to, there's no transitioning schools. It's an everybody knows everybody kind of situation for sure.
Yeah. No wonder why they needed you to play football or soccer or whatever.
Yeah.
I asked you last week. I mean, obviously I imagine that the Packers are just huge there, but you said you never got into football.
No. I don't know why. We always had every game on at our house. It just wasn't something I ever watched. And like Lambeau being 35 minutes down the road, my third grade teacher worked at Lambeau on weekends. So I got that tour as a field trip. And then when I played Northwoods ball, when we would go to Green Bay, we would always leave like an hour early for Green Bay. So we could stop at Lambeau and everyone would get off the bus and I would be the only one left sitting there because I can go see it anytime I want.
That's funny.
To me, it's not a special place.
Where did you play in the Northwoods League?
I played for Wisconsin Rapids.
So kind of a home game-ish.
Basically, yeah. That's about 2.5 hours from home for me. And then Green Bay is even closer. So I would have a lot of tickets being handed out at those games.
Yeah, for sure. Tell us about St. Cloud State in Minnesota.
Yeah. I enjoyed my time at St. Cloud. It's a town of about 65,000. It's got that college town feel. And the campus is within walking distance of downtown. So, that's something that obviously it was freezing there in the winter.
Sure.
But it was something that, everything's close enough that you don't necessarily need to have a car. So for my 4 years, I didn't have a car there. And then campus, the first time I set foot on that campus, it was the only campus that I officially visited. Mm-hmm. And it just had that home feel for me. So that's really what did it there.
What's the coldest game you've ever pitched, be it high school or college?
So in college, we had a series where I believe it was my freshman year. We played four home games total that year. So we drove 8 hours south to play in Nebraska, just to get out of the snow, and it was 26 degrees.
Damn. That first pitch.
Yeah.
How'd you do?
I didn't pitch down there. That was one where I sat in the dugout with my heated jacket and let other people take that one.
Well, you guys got I don't know if you think it was lucky or not, because you're semi used to it, but the first week here, it was hot, let alone, you know, it wasn't even warm.
Yeah.
We had one game on the Friday, the first week, the game time temperature at 6:35 was 89.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was like 73 opening day and then, you know, like 78, 85, 89, something like that, the first four games.
Yeah.
And we've had
for the home series.
Yeah, the Greensboro series. We had opening night temperatures in the 40s. One year was like 39. It's just, you never know what you're going to get in April there, but it was nice. It was nice this year.
In Brooklyn, we had, I think the first three games were mid-40s, low 50s.
Yeah, and you got the wind there blowing in off the water.
And we had a lot of guys complained about it, said they were freezing. But I was comfortable in it. It was a good 20 degrees warmer than most of the games I played in college.
And you pitched great. 4 innings, one hit, no runs. So yeah, you were just fine.
Yeah, it was back home for me, basically.
Yeah. I noticed when you guys got here, you filled out the questionnaire, and you had put that if you weren't playing baseball, you would be a software engineer. How did that interest come to be? And is that what you kind of studied in college?
Yeah, that was, so I went into college as a mechanical engineering major. Mm-hmm. And then I got through calculus 2, and I said, that's enough math for me.
Switch. How many more calculuses did you need to?
There was one more after that. And everyone said it was easier than the second one, but I had just decided that I was done with the math side of things. So I said,
yeah,
switch me to an engineering that doesn't need any more math. And I ended up with software engineering, and that was something that I didn't have any background in high school. We didn't have any coding classes or anything like that coming from a really small high school. So that was something I had to pick up on a fly, and I had a really great friend who helped me get started on that and helped me through all that beginner phase of coding.
What kinds of things do you envision doing someday with that?
I'm going to be honest. I don't really know. That was once I got to junior, senior year, we started to get into those really big projects with it. And I started to realize that maybe it wasn't it wasn't something that I was necessarily very good at. Just because I didn't have that coding background, and playing baseball at the same time
makes it tough.
Was definitely detrimental to my learning process with that. I did well, but it was something that I realized was probably going to be a struggle once I got into those larger projects, which obviously getting into industry, they teach you everything that you need to know in training there. And during your internship, it's a completely different game from those classes. So I think once I got into an internship and into the industry, I think I would have been okay. But that was just a self-awareness piece my last couple of years.
Goals for the rest of the season?
I'm looking to continue the 3-4 game streak that I'm on currently. Continuing to get hitters out in less than 4 pitches, and continuing to throw deep into ball games and help that bullpen a little bit.
So you've thrown, you threw 7 on Wednesday, 6 twice previous. You only won so far to get through 6, I believe. Do you kind of take pride in pitching deep into a ball game? You only threw 75 last night. Did you want to go out for the 8th? Did you feel like you were ready to go out for the 8th? I know they don't want to push you guys, too far. Because it's not just 75; it's all the extra warm up pitches and the up and down and all that. But did you feel you wanted a shot there at the 8th?
Absolutely, always. Coming from that college mentality where it's basically just win or don't play kind of thing. That's like the drive to be back out there and to do it yourself is just burns in you. And especially with this team where we've got 4 starters and 2 bullpen days a week.
It is weird.
Yeah. That's something where if you can take an extra inning, you take that extra inning because the next day is probably a bullpen day. So you save as many of those arms as you possibly can just by going the extra mile.
Yeah, for sure. And then it was nice of them to save all the runs for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could have spread those runs out a little bit.
I know it's brutal. It doesn't work that way. But yeah, I mean, you could have spread 5 runs around 3 games and got 3-1 in the last four days. You know?
Yep.
But yeah, that's not how it works. I mean, I know your approach doesn't really change, but you know, when you take the mound, then you got a 3-4 run lead, and then, you know, it blows open from there. I mean, I know you're aware of it.
Yeah.
Does it? But I know your approach can't really change, because that's when things will start to go haywire. But I mean, it's got to be at least a little relaxing, might be the wrong word, but you know, you're certainly aware of the situation.
Absolutely. That's one where you've got that, what it was, 3 in the first, I think.
Yeah. And 3 in the Rickson homered, and then they got 2 yep. more. Yeah. 3 in the first.
Yeah. So you get a lead early, and the worst thing you can do is relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Become just a little bit complacent. And that's one where it's just foot on the gas. And that's one where you get the situation where you can throw balls more in the zone. You don't necessarily care if they're down the middle. You don't care if guys hit them, because obviously you've got a defense behind you and you've got a 3-run lead. And most of the time, guys are going to get themselves out, and you're going to have success just by throwing strikes.
Matt, this was awesome. You did a great job. Thanks so much for a few minutes, and you'll be out there next week against Rome here in Lakewood, and go get them then, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Blue Claws left-hander Matt Osterberg for a few minutes here on Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 69. Introducing Bally Live, the only app where minor league baseball fans can score major rewards when you stream your favorite teams, chat with friends during a watch party, and test your skills at trivia. You'll score rewards. Being a fan of the minor leagues has never been so rewarding. So what are you waiting for? Download Bally Live for free from the App Store or Google Play Store and start scoring rewards today. Blue Claws are home through Sunday, and just checking in on what's going on this week. Thursday, of course, Thursday, Friday's Girl Scout Night with post-game fireworks. Saturday, Marvel's Defenders of the Diamond Night with Spider-Man. And then Sunday, the usual Kids Day Fair, capped by Kids Run the Bases, and Kids Eat Free as well. Of course, July 4th is coming up 2 weeks from today, as we tape this on the 20th. It's presented by Camping World Red, White, and Blue Claws postgame fireworks, and you really want to check out the new Blue Claws Stars and Stripes cap. It's on blueclaws.com/shop. Just type in stars or stripes in the search bar. You'll see it there. Really came out nice. It's the red, white, and blue version of the surfing crab, and they put little gold stars on the surfboard that he's got. I think you really like that, and that is a popular item going quick in the team store. So check that out as well. That'll do it for us here today on Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 69. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Thanks for listening to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.